Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
You can say we had a good start, but we gave them odd-numbered rushes. We missed our assignments, and you give a team like that, they made us pay dearly. Talked about odd-numbered rushes. If you're going to hand a team that was just Stanley Cup champions odd-numbered rushes, you're going to pay dearly, and they made us pay. That's on us.
And us is the Sabre group that is back on the ice today as they now have this window of time once again in preparation for the New York Islanders on Friday on Hockey Fights Cancer Night. The Islanders have two games in between now and then, including tonight, home to Anaheim. I have a new nickname for you.
What?
Phil Sims.
Why would I do?
Because you are in love with the NHL simulations for every single play.
Oh, well, yeah, especially
how
when
about
after
MZ.
No, but especially after the game where Lindy is really quick to point out mistakes and breakdowns that may have happened a little bit behind the play as the camera is panning from like right to left on the first goal of the game, the Boquist goal. And you know, you kind of, you don't see Obi Kubel in your picture, then you see him and you, but that's not the focus, right? I'm more focused on, oh, Byram came across and then Power came out to challenge on the puck carrier. And, but then Lindy mentions after the game that Obi Kubel missed his assignment. Then I go back to the simulation. I'm like, just wanted to see where the numbers and the players are on the ice. I think that's great. So yeah, I'm in love with it because it's a new toy. It's the first month of the year. Friday is November 1st. Friday is the second month of the season. Then it's old news. Then I won't talk about it as starting on November 1st, but now it's still October. It's a new toy and it's fresh for me. So I enjoy it. It's like the week or the month after Christmas and then boom, everything goes back to the closet.
Dude, you're still using four colored pens, which were presumably a new toy back in 1983.
Yeah, but this is now for absolute, like, I need my four-color pens. I need the different
as
colors.
As you will need your simulator to make your points clearer and clearer.
Yeah, but I like to use different tools. And, you know, Lindy Ruff talks about on-man rushes. The on-man rushes in the game last night, according to Sports Logic, were 5-4 for Florida. But the difference is that Florida got all their on-man rushes early in the game and set the tempo and took the 2-0 lead because of it, right? If you're able to, like, eliminate maybe one or two of those unmanned rushes early in the game. And instead of being down 2-0, you're 0-0 or you're down 1-0. It's a big difference. It's a big difference in the game and how you're battling back. They got back to 2-2 in this game with another power play goal. So 2-for-2 now. Well, 2 goals in 2 games. But it just, I feel like they put themselves, the Sabres did, put themselves in a tough position because of giving Florida too much ice and too much room to be able to come up the ice and attack with unmanned rushes. 3-on-1, 4-on-2s, you know, 2-on-1s. That's all it was.
Right, but it's still a one-goal game with 6 minutes left.
Yeah.
So to me, like, all of this stuff is moot. And I think anytime you're looking to defeat the Stanley Cup champs for the second time in a month in your barn, you should be salivating one down with 6 minutes to go. You should absolutely feel really good about your position, but they couldn't get it to a position where they actually could pull the goalie and make a push. And unfortunately, the captain, who acknowledged this, and the coach, who acknowledged this, took a very ill-advised penalty, which resulted in a $5,000 fine from the NHL today. And wouldn't you know it, the Panthers score immediately on the power play with Dahlin in the box. And that is what opened up the gap, which then makes you think about all the other things that you just talked about in the first 40, 50 minutes of the game.
They did have a power play early in the third. They did not score. They had a couple of chances. They had the 4-on-4 to kind of maybe try to open things up a little bit. They weren't able to get it back to 3-3. Dahlin takes his penalty. You know, yeah, I mean, he hits Lundell in the face with his stick. And I think it, look, if it was, I think Dahlin tried to turn around and use his stick to kind of shield Lundell off in the chest, and he catches his visor. And look, is it a, you have to be responsible with your stick 100%. Is it a fine? Yes. Could it have been a suspension? Maybe, but the more and more I'm watching, and maybe it's because we watch so many slow motion replays and we have different angles, like, he didn't really catch him in the face all that much. He caught the visor and then more the chest. So he gave him a fine. Okay, I'm good with it. I'm good with it when I watch it again. And maybe it's because it's a Sabres too. So I'm like, okay, we don't miss Dalin on Friday if he got a, you know, a one-game suspension. Rasmus played well. I thought he had legs. I thought he was intense. He, you know, takes that penalty. Okay, I'll live with it. I'll live with that penalty. I think at the end, Florida scored to make that 4-2 when the Sabres missed to, you know, score on the power play early in the third period to make it 3-3. And so that's a big part of the game. And the other part is, you said it, you're down 3-2. You battle back. You make it 2-2, you give up a goal. Verhaeghe gets a bounce, right? The rebound hits him in the chest, right at his feet. He puts it in the open net. But right now, the Sabres are doing it. They won 3 of the last 4 without getting any offense from the Cousins line. And that, to me, is what has become my biggest worry right now, is that, yeah, you won 3 out of 4. But in a game where if you get something from the Cousins line, maybe you're up 3-2. Maybe you're tied 3-3. You're taking it to overtime. You're getting an extra point. And you're not getting anything from that line. So what do you do next? That's where I'm at this morning. Because I thought it was a good effort, you know, up until the very end. And the score is 5-2. But you need production from your second line.
So what's your proposition?
Well, I almost feel like I got to work it backwards. So Malenstein, Obi, Kubel, Lafferty, that's your fourth line. As a group, as a unit, they're effective. They get in on the forecheck. They got speed. They're doing their job, right? So I'm not
what
touching
about
that.
Krebs?
Well, that's why I'm saying we're working backwards. So I'm
right, but if you're working backwards, they were 4-1-1 in the last 6 with Krebs on that line.
Yeah, Krebs was on that line, and maybe I've got a different role for Krebs right now. So I no Benson at practice today, so I don't think Benson is in the cards for me when I look at Friday, Saturday. He could be. Who knows when, you know, if he gets back on the ice on Wednesday, Thursday and feels good enough for the weekend, but I'm not going to think of Benson right now. So you got that Malenstein, Obi, Kubel, and Lafferty line. Okay, leave it at B. I think the Zucker, McLeod, Greenway line has been really good. And in their matchups and in what they're doing, and you use Zucker on the power play, you use McLeod and Greenway on the penalty kill, they have a role. They have a role as a third line, and they have their roles on certain special teams. I'm good with it. Now is your top 6. And I'm starting to think that things have to be scrambled up a little bit in the top 6. Because Lindy Ruff always says, you know, I look at duos more on your line. Okay, well, who are your duos here? If I look at the top line, Thompson, is Thompson and Tuck a duo or is Thompson and Peterka a duo? And if you're going to go with that and say that, let's say Thompson and Peterka are your duo, then maybe you got to move Tuck with Cousins and Quinn to be able to give that line a new energy, a new body on that line. Can Tuck drive that line forward a little bit? And I would put Krebs on top with Peterka and Thompson. If you think it's Thompson and Tuck that are the duo, then I would move Peterka with Cousins and Quinn, which have worked together 2 years ago and done really well. And then I would put Krebs up with Thompson and Tuck because he's been there. So I'm moving Krebs to the top 6 in a way of, you know, process of elimination here. But I got to figure out where my line is with the Thompson, Tuck, Peterka line and how I can adjust it.
Well, if we don't have anything definitive on Benson right now, then he certainly doesn't enter the chat. But
yes,
your decision, not yours, the team's decision last night to not use Jiří Kulik, again, not surprising. He's played very few NHL games. I just don't know what you're looking for if you're rotating through Kulik, who has limited games, Krebs, who we would typically believe is better suited in lines 3 and 4, and Obi Kubel, who is very much like the fourth liners that have made up that trio this year. because Obey Kubel had only appeared in game one of the year and now in game 10. And for the rest of the time, it was basically Krebs with Malenstein and Lafferty. I guess this is the long-winded way of saying who is eligible, it's a polite way of putting it, to come out of the lineup.
Who's well, I think anybody from Malenstein, Obey Kubel, and Lafferty is somewhat eligible to come out of the lineup, but how, who do you replace them with? Like,
that's so, it. That's all. That's the width of your net.
That's the width of my net right now. I think Peyton Krebs has done a good job. Whatever Peyton Krebs has been asked to play, he's done a good job. And where he was the odd man out, in my opinion, when training camp, you know, was going on, and I looked at the lines, and I'm like, I don't have a spot for Peyton Krebs. Mm-hmm. I think he's played himself into saying, hey, right now I'm not taking Peyton Krebs out. I think he's done a good job. He's brought an element of intensity and emotion to the game. And I'm like, okay, I like, and I'm not just talking about roughness and toughness and punching and whatever. No, I thinking of quickness and getting in and winning one-on-one battles and those plays. So mm-hmm. I'm not touching him. And the other would be maybe Jack Quinn, but they already did that with Jack Quinn. And I think it would be where it could have been constructive the first time you pull him, say, hey, reset. Let's give you let's look at some tape. Let's get you a day off, kind of. Not that he needed it, but just let's have a reset. I think a second time now in the close quarter is not as constructive because it's not all on Jack Quinn. Dylan Cousins has to be much better in the middle of the ice to make that line go. And there's a couple of plays yesterday, Duffer, I pointed out, like, Dylan has the puck in the defensive zone between the tops of the circles and the blue line. And instead of moving it quickly, which the Sabres did a good job yesterday when they didn't have anything, let's get it in the neutral zone. Let's get it in the offensive zone. Let's keep it 140 feet away from our net as opposed to have it 50 feet away from our net. Mm-hmm. But Cousins twice got pickpocketed, and one time he just lost the puck and gave it away 10 feet inside your blue line. And I'm like, these are the type of plays that I know Lindy Ruff is going to not like what he's seeing. And then you pair that with the lack of production. Mm-hmm. But I'm not taking Dylan Cousins out right now.
Why?
Well, I don't see that would be benefiting for the team trying to look at the full season at 80. We're 10 games in, and I'm looking at 82. I want him to work his way out of it. I don't know why there's guys that I would say, well, you sit when playing that way. And there's other guys where I say, I want you to work your way out of it. But I think Dylan Cousins is the type of guy that I want him to work his way out of it right now. As we speak on Tuesday, I want him to work his way out of it. With some other guys, I would say, no, you're out in the lineup and you'll get your chance when you get your chance.
So what are you expecting on Friday?
Well, I think now that they have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of really sitting down and looking at everything, I would definitely put a scramble in the top two lines. I would take the Peterka-Thompson line and remove one of the wingers off that line and make a switch. And I would elevate Peyton Krebs to whatever side, if it's the Tuck side or the Peterka side. And I would hope that you can get offense from a duo on your top line, whichever Thompson with Peterka or Thompson with Tuck, along with Krebs to kind of, you know, play third wheel. And whoever drops the Cousins line would help to push that line into generating more offense. Like, Lindy Ruff made a switch halfway in the game yesterday. He took Obey Kubel off the Cousins and Quinn line because they weren't really doing anything.
Well, they missed a glorious chance, so the narrative could have been Kubel different put it when over Obey the Kubel net. Was right on the tip of the blue paint.
Yes, he put it over the net, but I think overall they weren't really getting anything done, right? So Lindy mm-hmm. looks around and he's like, okay, we need to change something, which they change. It led to, you know, a goal. Well, there was a power play goal, then there was a goal right after when they changed. So, but even Krebs, Cousins, and Quinn, when you look at natural stat trick, they were on the ice for 3 shot attempts for and 9 against. They were on the ice for 1 shot for and 8 against in the time they were together. Mm-hmm. Like one shot on net in over 6 minutes of ice time together, the three of them, they had one shot on goal. Like that is a lot of seconds with the puck or without the puck that you're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Krebs, Cousins, and Quinn was really working either. So that's why I'm at the point where look, they won 3 out of 4. Is it like you got to throw it in the blender and change everything? No. They won 3 out of 4 and lost to Florida, and it was 2-2 in the middle of the second. But I think now, just like the Pittsburgh game and the Columbus game, is an opportunity for Lindy to say, hey, we got some results, but we're not as good as we can be. We're not as good as where we should be. And, you know, make some change off that loss last night.
Yeah, I think that's important to reinforce here. Like, that's why we're having the discussion, but the discussion is also going to be that much more valid when Benson is healthy, because you can't, well, maybe you can, but it would seem to be surprising if you had Malenstein, Krebs, Lafferty, and Obe Kubel, all four of them always in the lineup with Benson, Quinn, Gulick as rotating players coming out, right? That would seem unlikely.
Unlikely, yes.
Right.
Unlikely.
So because the that point would be here is like, how many of the new faces on the bottom six are you going to keep using, and how does that impact what the second line looks like? That's why we're having the discussion. You're right. Yeah. It has nothing to do with 4-1-1 in the previous six coming into last night and the result of last night. It becomes, this will be the complement of bodies that you have to choose from. And because Cousins hasn't reached his pace, let's say, the offensive pace that we would have expected, these are things that you have to continue to manage within the game where you're trying to extend the run of success that they had just had. So this is not like a criticism of anything. These are valid questions based on what you absolutely, Lindy's words, right? Like Lindy's comments last night were so perfectly fair.
Yeah.
Perfectly fair. But they, and I'm not anticipating that they're not going to mean something moving forward. Again, that's why we're having the discussion, because if his words and breakdown very quickly after a game, which is almost unusual for a coach, right? Because we get generalities and glossing over in sports a lot, which doesn't really help the person asking the question, which then doesn't really help the person consuming the reporter's notebook and or video reports, and probably doesn't help anyone when you just generalize about things.
Yep.
We all learn from specifics and examples. And why we talk about things is because we learned from Lindy last night. Like you immediately like took 3 or 4 other nuggets away from the game after you had processed it in your own way. So I love all this stuff, but again, you can't dress 21 skaters a night and you have concerns offensively for some of your players. So I think there's a lot of valid questions here going into a very important back-to-back weekend against conference rivals, the Islanders and the Red Wings.
No, 100%. And so I think that's why if you're Lindy Ruff and the coaching staff, you're looking at a lot of positive out of the last few games here. Mm-hmm. And even you take a lot of positive out of last night. But you have a Lindy's quote was, what was it? We weren't good enough to get it done. We weren't good. But I think that's when you say we weren't good enough, it doesn't mean like, hey, we played as good as we could, but we're not good enough. It was like, we're much better than this. We weren't good enough in this game to get it done. I think the expectation internally with Lindy and the coaching staff and pretty much everybody is this team, when playing well, is really good. And we saw really good in a lot of games. Dallas is a really good team. The Sabres were really good against Dallas. Put that as the benchmark of where you got to be and how you got to play, right? And they did not get it done in this one. So, but for me, it comes down to, how do you make your top two lines work? And you're right. Like, but again, Zach Benson is 19 years old and Yuri Kulik is a young man as well. So are you thinking that your second line issues right now can get fixed by having a 19-year-old in his second year in the NHL or Yuri Kulik in his first year in the NHL be inserted into the lineup. I think that's a lot to ask those guys. That's why I'm putting a lot on Dylan Cousins' shoulders right now, because he's the veteran guy. He's the center. I always look at center first, and he's the one that has to be making this line go. Just like
Would you
Page
move him
makes the top
out
line
of center?
Go.
Huh? Would you move him even temporarily out of center?
Well, okay, so we don't have a two-hour show today. We only have an hour show, but the other...
We still got 34 minutes. We're good.
The other option, okay, would be to potentially think of elevating McLeod to that spot and say, okay, I'll put McLeod in the middle and I'll move Cousins to the wing. And maybe now that puts Krebs with Greenway and Zucker in the middle. So Krebs is better suited for bottom six. And you've moved McLeod to the second line with Cousins on the wing and Quinn on the wing. And you say, okay, I'm not going to touch Peterka, Thompson, Tuck yet, because they work well. They get chances. They've produced enough. But Cousins in the middle right now is not working. Like Montreal is doing that with Kirby Dach right now, where he didn't have really much to play with on the second line after the Slafkovský injury and after the Laine injury. And so they elevated Kirby Dach to play with Suzuki and Caulfield to give him confidence again. At some point, they're going to have to bring him back to center because they have to have their middle line, you know, worked out. And Cousins could be that same situation right now, where you move him over, McLeod's played well, you move McLeod up, Krebs slides into the middle with Greenway and Zucker, and now you're like, okay, Cousins, we're going to take some off your plate. So, and again, that's why coaching is so important. You have that conversation on the daily with the players. You sit in your office, you watch tape. You have to figure out where the player is in their mind space and their mentally. Are they in a good place where I can push and say I demand more out of you? Mm-hmm. Or are they completely shut and I got to move them over and put somebody else there to give that player a little bit of a breathing room?
Briefly on Kirby Dach, obviously he missed the bulk of last year due to injury.
Yes.
So, and trying to weave everything we're hearing at Sabres Live on X into the conversation here. Quinn obviously missed a lot of time last year.
Yes.
Would Quinn benefit from a brief cameo in Rochester?
That would have to be a conditioning. He cannot go down. He's not waiver exempt this year. This is year three. He cannot be sent down to Rochester. He'd have to be put on waivers, which is not going to happen. You're not putting Quinn on waivers. But could you say you're going to go down and have a conditioning in Rochester? That's very tricky. Like, again, I think there's many options that should be laid out before getting to that. And maybe one of the options is, again, and that's why I put a lot on Dylan Cousins, because Cousins in the middle should be getting Jack Quinn going, should be the facilitator, the conductor, everything. So is moving Cousins off that spot and putting McLeod there the option? There's two options. That's one, and then there's the breaking up the Thompson, Tuck, Peterka line and readjusting everything a little bit with your top six. Those are the two options you have in front of you to make that second line go.
Mm-hmm. I think there's more than two options.
Yeah, but that's sometimes when there's too many options, Duffer, it scrambles everything and you don't know. Like you don't focus on the right things, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, that's where it gets hard. But I you're right. There's many options.
Who's likely to snap out of it quicker? Ooh. Quinn or Cousins? Or does it happen simultaneously?
Oh,
no. I gave you a this, that, or the other.
Yeah, this, that, or the other. You didn't give me the fourth option, or boat are going to struggle for
above?
A while. No, boat would struggle for a while, right?
Yeah, I'm not that kind of guy.
No, we don't want to even explore that. It's just like, do you want me to take a coin and flip it in the air? Because really, like,
no, but it's based on what you're seeing, obviously, Marty. You have instinct.
It's going to break out.
You have instinct in evaluation of what you see shift after shift. So maybe one is ahead of the other in your eyes. That's why I'm prodding here. So
no, I get what you're saying. I would probably think Cousins is the one that maybe is more likely to break out before Quinn, just because at least he's gotten to the front of the net a couple of times. He's had a couple of looks. Like, you look at last night's game. Quinn had a total of zero shot attempts at 5-on-5 in the game. Zero. Not even a shot attempt. You know, at least Dylan Cousins had four. Dylan Cousins, two of those shot attempts were from the slot, and one was from in tight. Like, you're looking at the numbers, and you say, at least Cousins is giving you a couple of shot attempts. Like, when at the end of the night, you're looking at Quinn, Greenway, Krebs, and Lafferty had zero shot attempts in the game. Quinn should have four, five, six every game. That should be like the norm. You are going to get four, five, or six shot attempts a game. And sometimes you may get eight or nine. That's just the way it should always be.
Lots of NHL action to be played between now and the next Sabres game, which comes up Friday. It's a black and red night from a uniform standpoint, but it's an all heart, all emotion matchup when you consider it is Hockey Fights Cancer Night. So we look forward to seeing you inside KeyBank Center. And show us who you're fighting for. You could win tickets for Hockey Fights Cancer presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Sprint or download the placard and write the name of the person you're fighting for, and you could win. Visit sabres.com/fight today. We'll keep the gloves on and not spar too vigorously after the break. It's Marty and just the host back after this on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Paige Thompson has 11 points during a 7-game streak, and Rasmus Dahlin now has his first goal of the season, but the Panthers won 6 of the last 7 visits to Buffalo. The good news is you won't see Florida in Buffalo the remainder of the year. In fact, you won't see the Panthers in North America for the next little bit. They are already in Helsinki. They're going to do some 3-day meet and greet there before they end up squaring off with the Stars for a couple of games as part of the global series in Tampere. So that's where they're at.
Tampere, home of Mika Noronen. That's my, if I have to put a spot on the map and they would be like, where's Tampere? I know where it is because that's the home of Mika Noronen.
And the Cats go over there at 6-1-1 in their last 8. The Sabres are 4-2-1 in the last 7. Next game is the Islanders, Hockey Fights Cancer Night on Friday. If you have more questions pertaining to the roster and or last night, continue to hit us up on X at Sabres Live. In the meantime, your biggest NHL story outside of Buffalo last night.
Connor McDavid's injury. So looking back, so 5 years ago, Connor McDavid, last game of the season, ran into the net against the Calgary Flames at the end of the 18-19 season. And he ruptured his PCL, had a torn meniscus and everything. And then the big story came out a year and some later was the documentary on how he did rehab instead of the injury, the surgery. And he, it was an intensive rehab, right? And look, this is 5 years ago, but when he went into the boards, he went with his left leg facing forward. He got tripped up and his left foot leg kind of got tangled up on the boards. And now he's not even with the team. It's not like, hey, we'll, you know, kind of do treatments. We have our training staff going to look at you. No, he's gone back to Edmonton to see his doctors over there and the team's doctors and to be able to get better information. Now, the initial word out of Edmonton was it's not going to, you know, worry. It's not worrying anybody right now. But because of the history from 5 years ago and intensive rehab that he did on the left knee and everything, I'm just a little concerned. So that's big. Imagine the Oilers are trying to get back in it.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even, they're not getting wins with McDavid. How are you winning without McDavid is beyond like my, you know, the questions I'm asking right now.
They'd be the last team I worry about not to have a superstar because of how superstar laden they are. So yeah, it's actually not even a concern for me from a wins loss standpoint. It's a concern for McDavid, of course, but yeah. I don't think it affects the Oilers in the short. Like, put me on an island. I'm probably the only person saying this. I don't really care. That's why you paid Leon Draisaitl a gazillion. That's why you're going to pay Evan Bouchard a gazillion. That's why you brought in Skinner. You brought in Arvidsson. You have depth up front. Like, teams do this. I'm scarred by the years of the Sabres when LaFontaine wasn't healthy, but others stepped up, right? Yeah. Because there was a guy named Dale Hawerchuk that was able to do this. This happens in sports. We make, my opinion, we make too much of it in an absence because it's a team sport, and collectively there's a reason these are professional athletes and they will get better. And if anything, the embarrassment of losing 6-1 last night, and it's not an embarrassment of losing to Columbus because they've been really high scoring. They're above 500. They're playing well. It's the embarrassment of how they played. Like, they need to be better going forward here, but based on other results that also included McDavid in the lineup.
But it's also part of the whole thing is that, you know, they do have Draisaitl and they do have Bouchard and they do have Hyman and they do have those guys, but they're not performing well.
But they will. Now when you get a wake-up call.
Well, maybe they will. But so the Edmonton Oilers with their, okay, we have our superstar guys, but we added a little bit of depth by having Jeff Skinner and Victor Arvidsson and everything. And, you know, they are the second worst team when you look at the amount of goal scorers they have on their team. They have 10, mm-hmm. right? The worst team, I wrote it down over here. Where did I write it down? The worst team is the New York Islanders, which we see on Friday. They have only 9 goal scorers this year. The Edmonton Oilers have only 10.
Yeah, but they didn't have Matt Martin for most of it. So.
Well, yeah. The Sabres have 15 goal scorers. Mm-hmm. Sabres have 15 players with a goal.
Dude, they just rattled off 6 straight games of scoring 4 or more. I would exactly. expect nothing less.
But I'm just saying, like, that's, and we're worried, and we've spent a half an hour on the second line's not producing, but they still have 15 guys that have scored a goal. Yes. The Oilers have 10 guys, mm-hmm. and they should have more. Like, Hyman doesn't have a goal. Arvidsson doesn't have a goal. Like, they should have. So maybe it's a wake-up call. I'm concerned a little bit for the Oilers that Stuart Skinner looks absolutely lost. Every goal, he's like laying left, he's laying right, he's like slow in net, his body language, even early in the game. He gives up the second goal and he stays, his arms go down, shoulders go forward. He's
maybe
like,
tired.
Well, maybe. He's tired. Why? Because he didn't play the night before? Like, that's another thing. He shuts out the Pittsburgh Penguins. Not that Pittsburgh has got, they had nothing in that game. They didn't play well against the Oilers. But they went to Calvin Pickard in Detroit because they wanted Skinner against Columbus. I'm like, the guy is struggling. He just had a shutout. Play him the next game. It wasn't back-to-back, and they didn't do it. So anyway, that's that. And you talked about Columbus. Shout out to the great John Davidson, who, as the president of the team in Columbus, stepped in behind the mic yesterday as the color analyst, like he did for years MSG with the Rangers, as the color analyst on TV with Steve Mears on play-by-play, because Joe DiShelley is there. Usual like color analyst, and he was doing Amazon Prime in Canada. So JD stepped behind the mic and he was good. Duffer, the voice is there, the wit, the knowledge, it was all there. It was awesome to hear it.
So would you expect him to continue based on the result?
Well, maybe the 5 or 6 games that Columbus plays on Mondays where Joe DiShelley is not going to be there in his regular role. Yeah. I would think the fans in Columbus probably enjoyed that a lot, but it's not, it'd be weird to have the president of your, like, which was weird. It worked out for him, but if the results had been 6-1 the other way for the Oilers and you have the president of your team commenting on goals against and players and mistakes, it's a little different, but hey, it worked out and it was great. I think JD can handle it. He can handle anything.
How do you feel about me correcting something you just said?
Oh, just bring it. I'm good for correction.
JD is no longer the president in Columbus.
What is he now?
He's a senior advisor.
Senior advisor, you're right.
Don Waddell has all the titles. President of Hockey Operations, GM, wow. Alternate governor.
So. Senior advisor. He was the president and he's senior advisor. Still a weird position to be if you're...
True, but might be a little easier to digest, you know,
you're not
having
making the big
an advisor
decisions,
than
yes.
having the GM or the president serving as color commentator. No, maybe. I don't know.
But I like... I listen...
Well, we all love JD. Like, of course, he's going to say he's never not sounded great. He's been a natural since day one. Yes.
The little things, like the little moments he picked up in the game, and the details, he was great. But also, like when I listened to him, I didn't hear a senior advisor, a former president of Columbus, St. Louis, the Rangers. I heard the announcer. I heard the analyst, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, he had a different hat on yesterday. Not the one of a senior advisor, but the one as an analyst that's calling the game the way that he was seeing it.
Jackets are 3-1-1 in the last five. Chicago somehow beat Colorado, ending their win streak. Vegas rolls on and on and on. It was basically their fourth line that dominated last night, and they ended up blanking Calgary 5-0. So the good vibes are gone for the Flames, as they are with a few other teams that had a great start to the season. Vegas is ridiculous. I mean, their home offense right now is just off the charts. And then the emotional game of the night.
Oh, wait, before you say anything, Aiden Hill with a Marty Biron shutout last night. 16 saves.
They got to 16? They must have had an audit, because it was 12 most of the third period. So,
old 16 save shutouts like I used to love them back in the days.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of performance that gets you to the top of the Hockey Canada world for the Four Nations Cup. So, no, it's the Stanley Cup that Aiden Hill has. That's what should get him there. Anyway, Steven Stamkos, Nashville Predators in Tampa. It required extra time, not only during one commercial break, but ultimately at the end before overtime sealed it for the home side. What did you think of Stammer's return?
It was emotional. It was great. I thought Tampa does a great job. And look, it wasn't just a former player returning. It was Steven Stamkos, game president, a fantastic job highlighting, you know, the number 91 throughout the whole thing. The video was great, from the youth video that we saw Stamkos playing hockey as a peewee and his time with Tampa Bay and lifting the cup. And so it was fantastic. And they did it great, and had to be emotional for Stammer, who got a couple of assists, right? So good game for him. Nashville is still struggling a little bit, but
they're 3-0-1 in the last four. I think they're good.
Yeah, it's just, to me, they're not firing all that they should be. Like, maybe it was to be expected. Like, Stamkos has never played with anybody else but Tampa, and the adjustment is real. When you now have to adjust to everybody, as opposed to everybody kind of adjusting to what's already there. But he's starting to get there. Juuse Saros is playing better. They're playing better. But I still think my expectations for Nashville are better than what they're showing. And I want to see them get to that point. But Tampa is on. They're good. I'm telling you, like, they have some skills, and Kucherov is just lighting it up again.
Yeah. I mean, they're 3-3 in the last six, kind of just hit and miss here. But last night, you know, fittingly, Stamkos, all eyes on Stamkos, and he has a couple of points, but Jake Guentzel, his replacement, effectively, had two assists, including the game winner in overtime on the Nick Paul goal. So Vasilevskiy has beaten Nashville 9 straight times. Of course, they have limited head-to-head competition, being in opposite conferences, but I'll take where the Predators are at. They've found a way to dig out of some deep holes in games of late, which is a good marker moving forward for them. San Jose, I don't know. Somehow they couldn't do it. Last year they got into double digits before winning a game. They were very close to doing it again this year, but they decided to win last night, and miraculously so. They got their first win in 10 games, and they did so by scoring 3 times in the final 5 minutes, basically, and then winning in overtime. Unbelievable. Utah, old habits die hard. That was a 4-1 game that they absolutely should have walked away with.
And I get it. Utah's got some defensive injuries, but you're up 4-1 after two periods. Lockdown City, you're playing San Jose. They haven't won a game. And, you know, you're up 4-1 with 5 minutes left in the game. And that, to me, was like, what? Seriously, like, and in overtime, I felt like they weren't really sharp in overtime as well. They took a penalty. They end up giving up a goal in a power play. I didn't think Utah was sharp, and maybe they took San Jose too lightly. But you know, when the
they've
Sharks
lost six
won,
of seven. I think it's not just a San Jose problem.
Yeah, but when the Sharks won, it felt like they had just won the Stanley Cup on the bench. Like it was a full celebration. I'm like, okay, act like you've been there before, but it's
they hadn't. That group had not.
That's the thing.
They've never been to the winner's circle.
And their coach is first NHL win. So it's like not like he's been there before either. So you're right. They haven't been there before.
Oh, man. It was, it was just, for as shiny as Utah was for the first couple of weeks, it has been a miserable run here for them. And then there's Vancouver who picked up a point because they had a comeback against Carolina. But as we talked about last week, when I was in absolute awe of the career total game winners by Sebastian Aho. There you go. Now he's tied with Ron Francis for the franchise lead because he did it again last night in overtime. Canes, by the way, have won four in a row. And Will Carrier got his first with Carolina.
Yeah, so Marty Natchez has looked good. He's got four now this season. The Vancouver Canucks came back in the third period. They played well. But that goal by Aho was pretty impressive to me because it was a hard play to the net, and it was Gustav Bear who walks down the middle, and instead of trying to put a nice little pass to Aho in front, he rifled it really hard, and it went off Aho's skate, off the goalie linking it. Then he's able to corral the rebound. He's got an open net. Like, the composure by Aho to not, like, be like, what the hell? Like, you threw it at my feet. No, he made something out of it. Mm-hmm. And I like a hard play. I always say, like, if you're going to give me a pass, make it a hard pass. At least if it's going to get to me. And if I don't handle it, it's on me. And I think Gustav Bear were like, hey, there's no such thing as a bad pass. It's a bad, like, player receiving a pass, and I'm always not a bad player. So he put it really hard in his feet, and he still managed to handle it.
All right, quick timeout. That was your unofficial NHL recap from last night. Marty's working on getting it sponsored moving forward. Sabres Live continues after this. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Amherst are back in action this weekend, Friday and Saturday in Utica, and then they have a game a week from tomorrow in Cleveland before they actually return home to Blue Cross Arena. They had a wild game against the Monsters on Saturday. They were up, they were down, they were up, they were in a shootout and trailing. And Housecat slammed the door on the last four shooters before Konsta Hellenius provided the shootout winner in six rounds of exhilarating action between the Amherst and the Monsters. So good for Rochester to bounce back the way they did with a little Cleveland sweep over the last two.
Yeah, and it's good for the Housecat, Michael Hauser, to get the shootout win. And, you know, obviously the prospects for, you know, the Buffalo prospects in Rochester, you always keep an eye on them, and Consolanius getting the shootout winner. But just to try to get some tractions now when you're, you know, the Rochester Americans and those players, and, you know, get some wins. And, you know, that division last year was so tight. Remember how, like, there was barely any movement? Well, barely any points separating the top and the bottom, and always movements. That's a big thing in the AHL, and try to get some points in the bank right now if you're the Rochester Americans.
Yes, and one of our favorite former anthem singers has signed with the Senators organization, Malcolm Subban, because Mads Søgaard is injured again, unfortunately for him. And Subban signed yesterday with Belleville. So,
talking about Kevin Kennedy, one of our favorite.
Kevin just sang in Nashville on Saturday.
That's why.
And it was beautiful.
Like, he signed in Nashville, in Ottawa. But good on Malcolm Subban. And
we're in a world of great performers, really. We are.
Exactly. But you talk about Ottawa, right? The Ottawa Senators right now, I've had a little bit of a, like, a 4-4-4-4 in the last 10. Goaltending's been, they had the lead in Vegas. They gave it up. They lost in regulation. Allmark was out with some sprain and soreness and hasn't looked like he did early in the year. So Ottawa's having a little bit of, I like that team. I like the Ottawa Senators. I like their roster. But they are going to have to get their goalies healthy and in order for them to have some success.
One word on the Dwayne Wade statue?
Ronaldo? Isn't that this? Well, remember when was it Ronaldo that had his statue that was just like a bad one, and they had to redo it, and then now it's fine.
Oh man!
The Dwayne Wade statue. I mean, I love that the sculptors were interviewed after, and they said we did the best that job that can be done with human hands, knowing that they know it wasn't great right away by saying that. Ugh.
As you would expect, Dwayne has handled everything with incredible class along the way. And it is a beautiful testament to a wonderful career. We'll see you tomorrow.